This is Michael Kaiser, and you're listening to the Good Beer Hunting Podcast. Welcome back to another episode of the GBH Collective, where we bring you the stories behind the stories from our writers to photographers from all over the world. This new series of episodes is made possible by our Patreon subscribers. Patreon is a way that our readers and listeners can subscribe to GBH with a monthly contribution, just like subscribing to a magazine. And we give back to our subscribers, which we call the Fervent Few, through events, discounts, exclusive gear and art, and a host of other perks. Because to us, being a Fervent Few member makes you part of the team. And for the 70 or so subscribers we have already, they're already enjoying the Slack channel we set up as a direct connection with the GBH crew and each other. If you want to join, visit patreon.com/goodbeerhunting or click on the link in our show notes. A special shout out to the teams at Hops and Grain in Austin, Texas, and Cloudwater Brewing in Manchester, England for their top-level contributions to our Fervent Few community. With your help, we're adding more and more great content to Good Beer Hunting. This week, we've got Austin Ray, our editorial director, talking about our coverage of Wicked Weed pretty much as it was occurring, and his interview with Mitch Steele about his new Atlanta brewpub concept. We'll also check in with Bill Holland, one of our newest recruits who's been contributing to our B-roll section in between his hours selling beer for Miller Coors, which lends a unique perspective to our team. As usual, a diverse range of topics from some great storytellers. This is the GBH Collective. Listen in. Hey, Austin.
Hi, Michael.
How's Atlanta?
Atlanta is good. I'm looking out at it right now. It's cooler than it should be, which is wonderful. Yeah. All the plants in the yard are doing great. I'm happy.
You got any chard coming up?
Got some chard, got some peppers, tomatoes, muscadine, citronella. What else we got?
What's a muscadine?
Muscadine's like a southern grape. It's they have like a thicker skin though, so you can't just pop them. You have to like chew and get the shit out and then take the skin out when you're done and the seeds and stuff.
That sounds like something I would try once and then probably never again because it would be annoying.
Right. It's a more difficult grape.
Yeah. So. I like how everybody wants all these heirloom things to exist, but then they try them once and they're like, this is really frustrating. I never want to eat this again.
Yeah. This is too much work. Exactly.
How's your conversation with Mitch Steele the other day? That was an exciting one.
It was cool. Yeah. Actually pulled it up to remind me. I have to finish writing this intro. It was cool. He is a really nice guy and almost like a little too good at talking, you know, like he's like, You got to like really push him a little bit. But I think we got there. Everyone will find out next week.
Too good at talking as in like he's a little too slick handling the media or he just controls exactly. You with like the stare.
No, he's just like, I think he's earnestly super nice and also just good at sound bites.
Yeah.
So he'll just be like, here's a perfect thing. And I'm like, but wait a second, Mitch, hang on. What about this? And he's like, oh, you have a good point. Now I'm going to say some stuff. And so, but yeah, I think we got into some of that. We'll see.
Yeah. Did he announce the name of the new brewery yet?
Yeah. It's called New Realm.
That's right.
Which he said was kind of a description for the three guys who are involved because they've all been in, obviously he's been at Stone. And one of the guys is at what used to be in Constellation. And one of them was at, I think they've all been at Anheuser-Busch. So it was kind of like, this is a new realm for all of them. He also said that they had like pages and pages and pages of names that they all hated. And this was like kind of the one that they could all say they didn't hate.
Gotcha. Did you guys dig in? One of the things I was curious about, and I passed along to you as a note that I was curious about, I don't know if it's relevant though, is the role of True Craft from Stone as like a financial wing that was going to help people like build up craft breweries. I was curious why that wasn't seen by him as the option versus partnering with a couple of guys from, you know, what could easily be seen on the surface as like two guys from corporate breweries want to start a brew pub and they hire Mitch Steele to do it, which is almost like the reversal of fortune of him having left AB to build Stone.
Right. That was the first question I asked.
Aww.
He was not interested in it. It was very...
The question or True Craft?
A little bit of both. I'm looking at the transcript here. His response was, there was absolutely no interplay at all. And I was like, okay, cool. So you're saying like, but like that wasn't an option. And then he just kind of talked on and I was like, oh, I got the impression he was not interested in talking about it. I tried twice. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah, well, what's the neighborhood that this is going to be in Atlanta? Give us a little bit of the context for it.
Sure. It's in the Old Fourth Ward, I think technically is where it is, but it's along this mixed-use trail called the Atlanta Beltline, which has been getting a lot of headlines in the New York Times and different places like that. It's kind of this big rejuvenation project for the city. It's really cool. I mean, it's not without its issues. The housing along it now is just insane, and that's like kind of not the point. We want everyone to be able to live along it, but it connects neighborhoods in ways that have never been connected in Atlanta before. You can walk just like 20 minutes and you get across this like crazy swath of the city. And you know, it's basically a glorified sidewalk. It's like big and has a lot of bikes and people and stuff on it, but they are building this brewery. It's like right on it. So they're not going to have trouble, I don't think, with traffic and walk up and stuff like that. But it's kind of exciting. There are a couple building out on the West End, Monday Night and Wild Heaven are both building their second locations out there. And then there's places like Orpheus, which is a little more up to the north, but where New Rome is going to be is like very much city center. It's going to be cool to see what happens with that, I think.
Right on. Just before we jumped on today, I'm going to switch topics a little bit here. Before we jumped on today, I'm surprised you were even able to catch your breath. We pushed that Wicked Weed story live.
Oh my God.
Yeah. How's your day been?
It's been okay. I've been at home with my son, and then a friend came over and I had an interview for a different project. And then we had this 1600 word Wicked Weed news story that just went up. I kind of feel like I've been hit by a truck, but in a good way, I think.
In a satisfying way.
Yeah, I don't know. Did you see this coming?
Like, so the general take on that is, I don't think anybody saw AB buying Wicked Weed. I think that was kind of off the radar of anybody that was really thinking about the future of them. But anybody who knew their investment and understood how fast they were growing were curious as to what that capital, how that capital was going to morph, right? Because it had to turn into something. They were certainly extremely well funded from one of the founders of Proactive, or one of the the chief marketers of that product, which was a multi-billion-dollar company. I mean, just an insane amount of money from Guthy, I think you pronounce it as.
Guthy.
So that that family just had an incredible amount of money, and they retired in 2012, which is exactly when they became partners in Wicked Weed. And so there was never a concern, I guess, whether or not they were going to have enough money to fund their expansion. It was just a matter of where was that going to go, right? Was it intended as a long-term investment in something like Wicked Weed and organic growth, or was it a short-term investment in terms of flipping that money around? Did that money have to get pulled out for some reason, or did they just want to return on it? Who knows? Because all of that is private enterprise. It's all private investment. None of us have any real ideas to the intent behind some of that stuff. But I think everybody had a question as to where was this going to go next, because when there's that much money in something, it just kind of takes on a life of its own, has to go somewhere, and it wants something. It's just not always clear.
Right. And I know for me, that's been one of those things in the 4 or 5 years they've been around. Like, we all knew there was money and none of us ever looked into it that much. Like the people who, like the Guthys are like friends of mine. Like, so I've always heard like, yeah, there's like medical money or something. Yeah, there's a bunch of, it's over there. And they have that nice house in the woods. But like, yeah, I think the story today, especially, I think we really, not to pat ourselves on the back too much, but like we kind of dug down into that and like showed how, maybe it's not that surprising that, things shook out the way they did. It's like, they clearly are, this is an investment for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, at least for them, it was. And, Walt Dickinson himself, one of the brothers who were sort of the face of the company, and from what I'm able to gather from some pretty reliable sources close to the matter, were really just minority owners. They weren't majority owners of this thing necessarily. So their influence was somewhat limited in that capacity. But this wasn't his first business either. I mean, he'd started up a rainwater collection and sort of gutter cleaning business that sounds humble when you describe it that way, but it was in two states and had tons of, it was a pretty big business overall. And so he grew that thing from scratch into something pretty big as well. So he was already kind of the, the type of person who was able to grow and create value in businesses that essentially started from nothing and proved that there was something there that was worth investing in.
The thing that makes me wonder about Walt is like, so he's done the gutter thing, he's done the brewing thing. It's like, what's next? Like, do we see him opening another brewery? Do we see him like completely jumping ship and going to a different industry? Like, it seems like that could be a really interesting future.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's certainly got options. I mean, he's clearly experienced and talented at building businesses that way. But I think what people are starting to realize now with the announcement of that Wynwood, that Miami brewery that AB is going to build, because they explicitly identified a couple of their, you know, their existing acquisition partners. One of the guys from Ten Barrel was, I remember him being named in there as the sort of creative and strategic leads behind a totally new brewery that's going to be built from scratch. And that's kind of a big deal. I think that's the first time people realize that they're not just buying steel and concrete and brands through these acquisitions. Like, they're bringing on a board of members who have founded and built craft breweries from scratch and been highly successful at it that are still there. And they're still part of the company, and they're starting to work onto the AB side in terms of thinking about new possibilities. And then, as we mentioned in our article, Scott Metzger from Freetail, I think that's, you know, that's really what he was trying to get at, was that they have got kind of a murderer's row of talent and experience on that craft team now.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to think about how, you know, we've gotten used to Wicked Weed here in the Southeast as our special little thing, but there's probably going to be some Wicked Weeds brew pubs all over the place now.
Yeah, I mean, it's starting to happen with Goose. Yeah, but I mean, also, I think just that, you know, when you get talent like that, when you get that many people that are experienced at something, something like the Department of Justice regulation against acquisitions and not letting them buy too many, that doesn't stop them from starting their own from scratch. And they might not need to acquire anymore. I mean, why would you need to buy a brewery that's only a few years old at this point when you can just start one from scratch and build it organically with the kind of talent you have on board? That's not going to slow them down anymore.
The Miami thing will not be as uncommon as it was.
No, not at all. It seems like I would imagine that that's going to prove itself pretty quickly.
Were you surprised at all? Well, I guess we'll, by the time this is published, we'll probably know more, but by the quick reaction of other breweries kind of pulling out of the both the festival and like the Jester King Post and things like that?
Yeah, the Jester King Post, I think that kind of summed up how I imagine most people feel about it, which is like they're really conflicted, right? Because these are people that they've been working with for a while. They have a they had sort of a shared agenda when it came to this kind of category of sour and funky beers and trying to build that category together to find customers. And like, I don't know, there was a lot of collaborative work done there, not just collaborative beers, but like actually collaborative work to develop a market. And you get pretty close with people through that kind of a process. And I think Jester King really expressed that in a perfectly respectful, but also sort of tough love way that I could appreciate, having seen numerous screeds from places like BrewDog where they just kind of start shitting on people right away and call them sellouts and dump their beer or whatever. I thought Jester King delivered the message of, you know, this is what matters to us, so we can't really violate that. We love these guys and we wish them the best. But you won't find them, you know, you obviously won't find them in Jester King bars anymore. So I don't know. I thought that piece probably summed up how most people wish they could articulate their feelings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jeff sounded like just like legitimately bummed.
Yeah. And I think it's a perfectly legitimate response to something like this for sure. I mean, it's funny, like as much as I personally spend on our Twitter account, I get accused of apologizing for the big guys all the time and talking about how ownership doesn't matter. I absolutely think that ownership matters. It matters to me in my own sort of personal way, in my own priorities. But I also don't think that like there's this weird evil intent kind of thing that has to be pushed, you know, that has to be pushed out there as the message when you talk about ownership. And like, I don't think deceit is a big deal. Like, that's not what's happening to me as a customer. It's just like, no, AB owns this brewery now. I think about them differently than I used to. That might lessen the sort of personal attachment I have to them, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I hate those people now.
Right. There's a big difference between saying, like, I no longer want to drink that beer and I, like, am mad at you for describing the business, you know? It's kind of like, I feel this way about stuff like religion and, like, okra. Like, if you guys like that stuff, that's cool. I'm not mad about it, as long as you're not hurting anybody with your religion and your okra.
I was texting with somebody about the Jeff Allworth piece, who, and he's written for us before. I would consider him a friend, even though we argue a lot. He wrote that piece about Ten Barrel yesterday that was just kind of a screed. I mean, called them Trumpian levels of deceit and things like that. He was obviously very upset about them not putting AB on the concert poster. But I was texting with a friend, and I was trying to express that I actually like zealousy when it's put in favor of something. Like, you know, we're all kind of zealots and overly interested in certain things to a degree. What I don't like is when that zealousy is used as a weapon to somehow challenge the purity of somebody else's vision for the same industry. Especially when we're talking about something like beer. It's a manufactured product. sometimes it's an artisanal product. It's never art. I don't care what anybody says. It can be artistic, but it's not art.
You're going to get letters for that.
That's okay. Address them to P.O. Box 507. Anyway,
it's kind of like, I feel like it's kind of like live your truth, but don't shit on other people's truths.
Yeah. I love it when people are living their truth, even if it's not right. Like the thing that I like. I just like seeing people fully invested in what, you know, their vision for something.
Right. Passion is fun to watch, especially.
Yeah. And I guess that's what I mean. Like ownership matters to me in the sense that like, I totally connect with somebody that shows passion through what they're doing. Like I totally fall in love with those people, even when I don't necessarily like, you know, align with them on everything. And you know, By that definition of my personal desire for ownership, I guess I connect with certain brands. Like when I went to Elysian recently for the first time ever, like I walked out of there feeling nothing, just nothing. But that's because I didn't, you know, that wasn't my hometown brewery the way Goose Island was for me, which I still feel something pretty deep and, you know, fundamental for, even if it's changed.
I am super curious about what the Asheville-ians are, you know, feeling right now.
Yeah, it seems to be pretty red hot.
I mean, it's such a local hippie drum circle. We love our business town, you know, like people who, oh man, I feel bad for like the person who's like hosting at the brew pub right now, because they are going to have to talk to some people,
no kidding.
Whether they want to or not.
It's going to be brutal. Anyway, I wanted to back up and I just wanted to talk about that since it was so fresh and literally just hot off the presses for us. But I did want to back up and just kind of pick your brain a little bit for readers out there who may not know about your role on GBH, or they may be only sort of vaguely know that you're the editor. Kind of describe to people who are, you know, describe to our readership, I guess, sort of what you do on a daily basis for GBH.
Sure. I spent a lot of time emailing and slacking with writers. That's like 75% of the job. And then, you know, those people turn in drafts of stories and I am really annoying and I mark them up and I send them back and ask them to do other things. And usually they're really cool about it. I guess that's a lot of it. And then there's a lot of, you know, I feel like our Slack has really changed our culture a lot. Like we're all like just throwing in on stuff together now, like brainstorming headlines and things like that. So there's a lot of that too. And then, you know, social media stuff. What else? Other things that come up? How am I doing describing this job?
Yeah. Well, you're definitely in the details. I mean, I would think the net result of a lot of what you just described in a very mundane way is, like you've been really responsible for bringing on a lot of the new writers that we've had in the last, I don't know, you came on last fall-ish?
Yeah.
A little earlier than that?
It's going to be like maybe 2 years in June, I think. I was looking through old emails trying to find something the other day and I was like, wow, we've been doing this for a minute.
Yeah, I think I might have just erased a whole year in there when I was saying last fall. I think it was two falls ago. Yeah, I mean, a lot of what you've been doing is bringing on new writers and then developing them sort of in the vein of GBH, because some of these people were the only place they write about beer at all, or the only place they write or shoot photos for at all, because they really like GBH and it's incremental to sort of their day job in some way, or an escape from it. But some of the other folks that we brought on are tried and true beer writers. You know, these are beer journalists, and trying to kind of corral them into sort of like the GBH way, for lack of a better term, is, you know, that's them adapting between multiple publications. I mean, some of them write for Beer Advocate, All About Beer, Draft Mag, things like that. And then they also write for us. And it's just a very different experience. I guess I'm curious for you as the person who's usually onboarding them. Like what is it about GBH that is often maybe the hardest thing to help people kind of figure out from a writer's perspective?
There's difficulties with, I mean, you know, we've talked about B-roll a lot because it's kind of a very GBH thing. And we all kind of struggle to get just the right moments into that section sometimes. But it's fun because like once it clicks with someone and they just start sending them, it's like, oh, you're sending me B-rolls now. That's cool. we got it. And then I guess on the other side of things, there's a lot of, oh, you let me have a lot of fun with this story, or like, oh, you let me write way too many words about the story. And like, I feel like those things are stuff that we're a little more lax on, but in a good way. You know, I think you've referred to it a lot of times as like your zine. And it kind of feels like that sometimes, like we're little punk rock shitheads sometimes. We have swear words in our headlines and stuff like that, which like you wouldn't get away with at a lot of places.
It's the little things. Course,
yeah, I'm attracted to that. So,
some of the stuff that's been coming out of Sightlines lately, I would say, is probably the biggest leap that we've made. I mean, when we started that thing, it was really just sort of like a small sort of perspective on some of the breaking news that was happening around the industry. And I think it was actually a pretty contained, simple thing to produce, bringing Dave Eisenberg on, former Brewbound writer, on to join us on and really lead the writing on that. That seems to have transformed completely at this point.
Yeah, it's amazing. I feel like we found our Sightlines guy. Don't ever leave us, Dave. But like, yeah, I like that we've made like a news section that I actually want to read. It's not just press releases or, you know, can art or whatever kind of thing that passes on a lot of beer websites that will remain nameless.
Yeah.
But like, you can give something like that that could have been mundane to Dave, and he will go interview three people and get this incredible take that I didn't even realize was in there. Like, there's a perspective to it. It's that, you know, the why it matters, that is what we call it on the site.
Yeah, we hammered on that for a while before I think it started to click for all of us, like what was so valuable about the why it matters piece. And to me, that's really what motivates us to go out and get the so what, right? Like, we don't just report something like this happened and then, you know, go home at the end of the day. Like, we try and figure out the so what. What does this mean? And sometimes that leads us into interesting places. I see Dave, like, he not only is he getting three interviews on a piece, but he's getting interviews from people like the mayor of a town who would never expect to be called by a beer magazine to ask about a new brewery.
Right.
I get really charmed when he does stuff like that.
Or he's just catching Greg Cook from Stone at the airport in between flights. And it's like, oh, you just, okay, thanks. Good work on that.
I think he loves it. I think he totally loves it. I think at first he was like a little reluctant to get back into the beer writing game. And now I think he's totally on fire again.
Yeah, it's great. He definitely feeds on it.
What are you excited about most, do you think, from GBH this coming year?
I feel like we're amping up in a lot of ways. We're doing more than we ever have before. I don't know how much our readers have noticed, but those Monday morning op-ed pieces that we've been kind of sprinkling in, or early in the week, I guess we had one on Tuesday this week, but still, these kind of like slightly shorter, punchier takes on things that just happened. I really like those, and our team seems amped up to write them. So
yeah, for sure.
Doing more of those.
Sometimes I think they kind of get swept up in the hashtag hot takes kind of culture a little bit. But what I really like about ours is that, I mean, they're coming from people who've been thinking about beer for 10 or 15 years. And so like their hot take that they write, you know, within an afternoon about a subject that they care deeply about usually comes with so much personal experience about how this thing even started to occur in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting an immense amount of perspective out of these guys in just a very, very short amount of time. And I guess that's what I like about having this really interesting dynamic of a team, where we have some people that are just kind of doing this as a fun outlet from their daily jobs, and then other people who've been doing this for so long and just wanted a new outlet for different kinds of writing and different kinds of thinking.
Yeah, I think it definitely shows it's energized in the kind of, especially in those that are those quick, like, you know, we're having someone give us something on Friday and it's up on Monday. There's energy there for sure.
Yeah. When do you think we just give the keys to Brian Roth?
I already did.
You and I can just go on a road trip and just let him run.
Perfect.
I am looking into flights to Louisiana. I think we're going to make this thing happen, man.
Oh, great. Awesome. Yeah.
You wanted to go visit Courtyard?
Yes. It's a little brew pub-ish thing in New Orleans. It's like a gravel parking lot and a pizza truck and really amazing pale ales. So that'll be fun. It's going to be, you know, miserably hot and sweaty. July in Louisiana. I can't wait.
And then I'm going to make us get in a car and drive all the way up to Shreveport, where it's probably even hotter and more miserable.
Oh my God, I didn't realize it's 5 hours from New Orleans.
It's a long way. We're going to do 10 hours of driving in July in Louisiana.
Oh, boy.
But we're going to go visit Great Raft, Andrew Nation's up there, who's making a new rice beer inspired by Louisiana's rice agricultural sort of heritage, which was totally new to me. I think that comes out this month or next month. But cool. I wanted to get down there and get a story on that and then get a story on him. He used to be one of the bloggers at DC Beer.
That's right.
Yeah.
I love that podcast with him. He seems like he's got a lot to say.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy for sure. All right, man, I am going to hang up with you, and then I'm going to call Bill Holland, one of those B-roll guys.
Nice. Tell Bill to keep up the good work. Thanks for talking to me.
All right, man, have a great night.
Cool. See ya.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, Michael, how are you doing?
Great, how are you?
Pretty good.
Where are you these days? You've been traveling?
Just a little bit. 2 weekends ago, I was up in Indiana again, up in Bloomington near Upland Brewing.
Gotcha.
It's a good time. Just it's been about a year since I was last there. Probably the youngest one on the GBH team. I don't know if anyone knows that, but
I think we're all actually aware of that now. We had a little conversation on Slack trying to figure out who it was, and I think we picked you.
Yeah, I think everyone realizes I'm the baby on the team.
How old are you?
This is 20, almost 24 next week. So we're getting there.
So young.
I know. Bright and bushy-eyed, bushy-tailed.
Maybe the tallest, though. So that's probably why it surprised everybody.
This is true. Austin at Up and Mr. Downers said, I did not expect this. You look much smaller on your Twitter photos. So.
Oh, man. I've never been to visit Upland myself. I've been invited a couple of times, just never been able to make it work, but I really want to get down there. It seems like they're really going for it lately.
Yeah, it's really one of those breweries that like has been around in Indiana for a substantial amount of time. I mean, talking about the 90s and even back in middle school, it was Upland Wheat Ale was the first craft beer my dad ever brought home to us. So growing up, going to a lake down in southern Indiana, it was like Upland Wheat Ale. And then it was also the first sour I ever had. So,
oh, cool.
Talk about going on to the deep end. I remember one time you said going on to the deep end of any beer style, the face I made as soon as I had an Upland Lambic was about as far off as you can get.
Yeah, it's a little different than maybe a Liney Shandy that a lot of people cut their teeth on up this way.
Yeah, a little bit different. Speaking of, that's what I'm drinking in honor of Brian's article today. So,
oh yeah, the history of Shandy, the unrated.
Yeah,
that was a great piece.
I don't know how many people are going to be reading that today with all the Wicked Weed talks.
It's doing shockingly well. I think there's this schism in our readership that cares very, very deeply about Wicked Weed and is just on Twitter all day, and then this other section of our readership that just does not care about that story, or maybe it hasn't hit them yet, and they're really excited about the story about a Shandy.
Good.
It's cutting through the noise one way or another.
That's good. I'll tell all the listeners out there that there you can be on both sides. It's allowed.
Yeah. Speaking of which, let's give people some context for who you are and what you do for a living.
As we've said, my name is Bill Holland. I am here in East Tennessee. I moved down here about a year ago as a sales role for Miller Coors.
Yep.
So the way our company operates, we have on-premise, for those not in the beer industry, this means bars, restaurants, nightclubs such as that. And I deal with the 60 largest accounts in East Tennessee, essentially consulting with them to help build their business, build our business, and help solve some of the problems that on-premise and bars face these days.
Yeah, right on. So how much cognitive dissonance do you feel then when you're writing and shooting for a site like Good Beer Hunting about all of these other breweries? I mean, I think it would probably shock most people to find that a MillerCoors sales rep is interested in even doing that for us to start with.
Yeah. So that's a funny topic because when I tell people, they kind of raise their eyebrows. I once went into a bar and told them, I started talking to them about their craft beer lineup and their draft system. And they were like, so are you a craft beer representative? And I'm like, no. I work for MillerCoors. And it's still a shock for some people, but it's an interesting dynamic. But luckily, I love working for the company I work for. And that, I mean, you know, Lisa Zimmer,
yep.
You know, some of the other people at Miller. It's been super fun having the openness that we have where I can go out there and do these things and also be proud of the Shandy I'm drinking right now or the High Life that's in my fridge.
Yeah, right on. I mean, we brought you in specifically to the B-roll part of the website, which is where we have we have our writers and photographers sort of submit these tiny moments along the way of whatever their beer journey is. And we were really interested in you just because it seemed like you were traveling a good bit. And you were taking these really great photos of just like these really human moments and then kind of capturing, you know, not only what that small moment was about from a very sort of specific angle, you know, who it was and what was happening. They were just kind of these cool little moments you don't normally get to see, but then, but also being able to relate those to something more important, right? Or something a little higher level as to like what you thought about what was going on in the world of beer. And it's been interesting. I think you're the first person we ever brought on that has, you know, that is exclusively doing B-roll. Like that's just kind of your jam.
Yeah, and I'm kind of happy it is just because I don't have the writing finesse that you or Michael or Brian or the rest of the team has. So I'm kind of putting these stories on the photos back, if you want to say. But
yeah, they read that way, like little postcards.
Yeah, that's the best way I guess you could put it. But yeah, B-roll's been great. I mean, I really loved is honestly is the way it kind of sounds is it's still kind of a shock every day for me to be kind of with the GBH team when Jake and Josh and Chris kind of said the fanboy attitude, like the cool kid, like the kids in the corner, just like geeking out of the cool kids. It's kind of the mentality I was with when you reached out. But yeah, it's been a great time. I've loved sharing some of my travels. Yeah, I mean, whether it was the simple thing, like just rolling with Terrapin for a day and just seeing the interaction a craft brewery can have with a distributor and how important that is, or going over to Nashville and seeing the cool things they're doing over at Bearded Iris or Blackberry Farm here in East Tennessee. It's making some noise with Saisons and some really iconic Belgian style beers. I mean, it's, I don't know how familiar you are with the Tennessee state flag, but it's made up of three stars and it's pretty interesting. If you break it up, each star represents a region of Tennessee. And if you want to break it up into new school breweries, I think that you've got your Wiseacre out in, East, in West Tennessee. You've got your Bearded Iris making hazy IPAs in Middle Tennessee. And then you've got Blackberry Farm making just some phenomenal Saisons and Brett Saisons and doing some interesting things over here. And for me as a drinker, it's just exciting having moved here, not knowing what I was getting into, to find something like that where there's really some iconic beer across the state. So, yeah, it's been a fun journey doing B-roll, and I'm looking forward to some more stories. So
yeah, right on. There was one post that you gave us recently where you mentioned you were on a crew drive.
Yep.
That's definitely like sales team lingo, right? Describe to people what a crew drive is.
Yeah. So. For those that are listening, a crew drive is essentially you get everyone, whether or not it's those who call on distributor partnerships, the three-tier system, those who are the actual reps that cover the states, and some other individuals. And we'll just go into bars and restaurants and just kind of tell the story about the beer. And so working with Terrapin, we were in East Tennessee, just talking with bars and accounts and kind of building the awareness, because a lot of breweries, even those that have large footprints, can sometimes, in the distributor's eyes, occasionally be swept up with all the other beer there is. So, sure. I mean, it was interesting, Todd, listening to the most recent podcast you had with the guys from Artisanal Imports and the importance of bringing in the reps from other breweries and the mm-hmm. things that go on. And to the point, from the perspective I've seen from distributor reps on the street, there are more people they have now have to work with than ever before.
By an order of magnitude.
Yeah, the sheer magnitude. I mean, you're talking about all the major breweries in the country, whether it's Dogfish Head, Ballast Point, Terrapin, whether it's Devil's Backbone, everyone's got a rep. And they understand the importance of it, but at the same time, the feet on the street for the distributor is handling all this in stride as best they can. So
yeah, and then you factor in self-distributing breweries at the hyper local level, and like you're just meeting with people all day long every day.
Yeah, exactly. So it's there's just so many more moving parts now, and I hear that from everyone in the industry. Even I'm super young in the beer industry, but everyone I talk to just talks about how much it's changed, how fast it's changed, and then also just how many more moving parts there are now to this whole thing.
Right on. Hey, I know, coming up, you're traveling to Portland, Oregon for the first time ever.
Yeah, it's exciting. It will be a trip that I've planned out with a brother that I've got up in Michigan. And so it'll be he and I just essentially eating, drinking, and hiking all our way through Oregon. So I'm excited to see some of the places like the Commons over there, Cascade.
Oh man, I love the Commons so much.
Well, I'm good. I'm excited to try. I've literally never heard anything until Austin and Lisa Zimmer told me, like, hey, you should check out this brewery called the Commons. So I'm excited for
that's
that.
That's my fault. I've been sitting on a story from them for months now. Last time I was out there, I spent 3 days with them just shooting and talking. And I just haven't had the time to finish that piece off. I've got to get in touch with them again for a couple more questions and quotes, and then can finally get that out there. But it's like some of the best stuff I've ever shot. Like, I'm so excited about it. And I've just been completely paralyzed in getting that thing out there.
Yeah, one of those moments where you look through your photos and you're like, you just get a little giddy. You're like, I think someone's going to like this, but maybe it's just me hyping this up in my head.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah.
Could be. Oh, man, they just make like super low ABV, like super delicate beer. I mean, the only brewery I've been to that I think is kind of in a similar vein as Suarez, maybe up in the Hudson Valley, where he's just making these tiny little things and they're beautiful.
Yeah, that is something I need to get to at some point. It's just taunting me from everyone that keeps talking to me, whether it was the Bearded Iris guys or what have you. It's everyone's talking about Suarez, and it just seems so peaceful. The first thing I asked Paul and Kayvon at Bearded Iris was like, so how was it up there? And they're like, it was so relaxed. They're like, you could feel it in the air. And Blake said the same thing. And yep. So now I just need to find a reason to get up there. So yeah.
But yeah, Commons, Cascade, what else are you doing out in Portland?
I'm hoping to find whatever secret stash there may be of Easy Orchard, because when I was in Chicago last, I had some Easy Orchard at the Northmen. And since then, I'm just trying to find an excuse to just binge on Pacific Northwest hard cider.
Yeah, I bet. Oh man, there's so much good stuff. Well, if you end up with a little extra time to take a day trip, let me know. I'll put you in touch with Kevin Zielinski down there. Seeing the orchard is unbelievable. But there's a couple cider bars in Portland. One is right over by Breakside Brewery. I can't remember the name of it now, but it's Caddy Corner, right across the street, and they typically have Easy Orchard on in there. And then of course you're right across the street from Breakside, which just has unbelievable pale beers.
Yeah, it's like a little kid in a candy shop, honestly, still. That's the enthusiasm I have for this trip, because it's just going to be on a whole nother level. Austin told me about Apex and Belmont Station. I don't know how familiar you're with them.
I've been to both. Great, they're fantastic bars for sure.
Awesome. So yeah, it's a laundry list of things, and it's going to be just go, 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 go the entire 4 days I'll be there at the end of this month. So,
well, you're the youngest guy on the team. I think you can handle it.
Yeah, I think so. We'll see. If you don't hear from me after the beginning of June, you know I'm probably just have stayed in Portland.
Yeah, I think that's like San Diego. I think that's a common gravity that place has.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, we appreciate what you do. Thanks for sticking with us and giving us such a cool, unique perspective, especially in the Midwestern areas. We don't necessarily get to all that often. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Appreciate it, Michael.
Looking forward to the dispatches. All right. Take care.
Awesome. Take care.
Thanks for listening this week, folks. If you enjoyed hearing from the crew, let them know. We have a new social channel just for this purpose, which is at GBH Collective. That's our handle on Twitter and Instagram. Those accounts are run by the entire team, not just myself and our editor, Austin Ray. Hit them up for travel tips, ask them questions about the articles, or just make fun of them to their faces. They have a pretty thick skin. We're going to try to bring you these episodes every couple of weeks, released midweek, and that's in addition to the long-form Weekender interviews. Thanks to all of our Patreon subscribers for helping make this possible. Our music is produced by Andrew Thibodeau, and our sound engineer is Jordan Stalling of Particle Audio. Aim true, poor liberal folks. Have a great week.